There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. Qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial. In the second part of the show, this is podcast number 458, September 16th, 2010. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly Podcast brought to you by Cameron Karting. Cameron Karting is your home for CRG carts, engines and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support for Northern California carters. Check them out at CameronKarting.com. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, Kimi is not coming back. Trust me. What happened to Hamilton? Can Ferrari go all the way? And of course, Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi, Mr. Nasser Hamid, and special interview with F1 Weekly listener Gabriel Rosenkotter. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Absolutely charmed, excited, a little bit under the weather. Long flight for us guys in California to go all the way to Monza.
Pretty close to halfway around the world for us.
And so, usually I'm pretty good with the jet lag, but this one hit me really hard. So there you have it. Yeah, from
Well, you Nice. Were there less than a week.
Yeah.
It's like,
so from Nice to New York is 8 hours, then New York to California is 6 hours. So the return flight was brutal, and, you know, some stupid person on there had a virus. And I am a bit under the weather, but I'm going to be fine. Steve, your thoughts? What did you think of Monza?
I thought it was a great race. Just phenomenal. Just amazing how far people were able to go on the soft compound. Yeah, soft mic. But just the fact that they took it so deep into the race, and then Sebastian Vettel actually goes all but the last lap.
Which was stunning, because I was looking at this on the monitors, and I see Vettel is about to pit. It's the last lap, and I'm going, what the... But he had to.
Yeah. Do that or be disqualified for not changing tires. Very interesting. Great race between Button and Alonso for the first half plus until they finally swapped pits. And probably one of the best races I've seen for the Italian Grand Prix, because more often than not, it's kind of a runaway race, and this year it wasn't.
Well, it certainly was exciting for me, I have to admit, and I highly recommend anybody who likes motorsports to go to Monza.
Yeah.
The history.
Exactly. The history alone is worth going to
Monza. And, of course, you know, it was my lucky weekend. And Flavio Briatore was there. It was just beautiful. And I want to thank Amanda Hunt for providing me credentials for the GP2, GP3 paddock, which was nice. I got some interviews that'll be coming up on some programs. And it was all very, very good for me. I had a great experience. Walking the banking, all the good stuff, you know. And then, of course, with Fernando on pole on Saturday.
And the Tifosi just going crazy.
It was just wonderful. The electricity in the air was out of control.
To get down on the track for the
presentation? No. Not at my age. No, but I took a lot of pictures of watching the crowd rush the winner's podium or winner's circle. And the crowd just got bigger and bigger. I'm really happy I didn't go down into that
fray.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it was a little too hectic. I was happy where I was sitting in my comfort zone.
Yeah.
But it was very, very nice. I enjoyed it with Fernando winning. I absolutely adored it. So there you have it. And I also went and visited the Alfa Romeo Museum, which is closed to Monza. Very, very nice. Highly recommend that. But there you go. Anyway, what is this talk about Kimi Raikkonen making contact with Renault and coming back when, in fact, it makes more sense to stay with rallying where now he's learning the ropes?
Yeah, I would think that what Kimi would be doing would be contacting Renault to try to get them to put a car in their WRC. Not... He doesn't want to go back to F1. Hasn't anybody watched any WRC? He's having a blast.
I think this is a ruse by Renault to get some sponsorship that could be on the edge of signing.
Could be.
And I know they want to win the World Championship in 2011. They're shooting for that. They think they've got the pieces put together now. But still, the whole thing just doesn't make sense to me, and I don't believe it.
And I don't think Kimi improves their chances significantly. Robert Kubica is as good a driver, if not better, just because he's better with the team. He's a better, overall, talent. Kimi's, pretty much raw speed, but Robert Kubica brings... You just got to look at what Robert's done all season. Come on. The guy has been in Q3 every week. He qualifies typically five, six or better in most races. He finishes typically 5-6 or better. It's like, what more do you want when you've got a car that's not quite as fast? What Renault really needs is to sign Nick Heidfeld to get a decent number two.
Well, exactly. And I think that's what they're looking for. They're also, I think, motivating Petrov to stop making those stupid mistakes. Because without the mistakes, Petrov has learned a lot and is doing well, but... You cannot do those stupid mistakes.
No, it doesn't serve the team. It doesn't serve himself.
So I think they've only got 5 races to go. And to make a decision on Petrov, they have to sort of push and shove a little bit. I think this is one way of doing it. So yeah. I think there's a lot of things they're doing here. Moving along with some possible new sponsorship. Maybe Renault putting in some more money. A lot of people are saying that maybe Jeannai Capital is not more interested in staying in Formula One. And, of course, pushing Vital Petrov to focus and try to be there next year with his rubles.
Yeah, I think what it is Jeannai Capital doesn't want the type of investment in Formula One that they're putting in right now. They would love to be able to sell, a chunk of shares back to Renault. And I almost got the feeling, too, when Renault sold it to him that they were more or less a placeholder, that it wasn't really a permanent solution, and that basically it was a way for Renault to divest themselves and look good to the board of directors, but to have it close enough that, as the market turns, some of their best sales the last couple quarters that they've had in several years. So they're
Renault
gonna
has turned to make big profits.
Yeah, so getting that money, getting some of that shares back, basically getting the controlling interest back should be no problem.
I agree.
And we'll probably see that in the offseason.
I absolutely concur. So there you have it. A lot of talk about Lewis Hamilton's mistake in the opening lap, the curse. They're saying that Jenson Button psychologically outdid him. I thought it all very fascinating what's going on through the web.
Yeah, watching what he did, I'm watching him and I see him make, because that was a mistake. There's no reason for him to be where he was and to put himself in a position where he could have his car damaged and not get himself knocked out of the race. I'm looking at him and going, he's still, he basically just pulled the Vettel and made, one of those kind of young, dumb, aggressive mistakes that he shouldn't have.
Well, some people are saying he was shaken and rattled by Jenson Button qualifying form. And it just carried on into race day.
Yeah. See, the problem comes down with that is it's like, dude, Button isn't even in your rearview mirrors as far as the championship goes. In fact, all 3 guys that qualified ahead of him, if he finished 4th, he would have still been ahead of him.
Exactly. In those mistakes he did in the past, where he's not thinking of the big picture, and a simple mistake, boom, you're blowing it.
Yeah.
Those points are so valuable. And the person that knows that the best is Fernando Alonso.
Exactly. And, we've seen Fernando, his second championship at Renault, once he was in the lead, he never made those kind of mistakes. He would gladly finish 2nd or 3rd because the points meant so much more than finishing ahead of, to winning the race. Okay, Lewis wants to win on the Italian Grand Prix. Great. But, dude, 2nd world championship would look a lot better on your resume.
Yeah, I agree. And that's where Jensen's button experience ends as a smooth operator.
Well, that and the fact that Jens, I think, is much more mature and he's much more apt to look at the big picture.
I agree. Martin Brundle says that Hamilton was left psychologically vulnerable on race day, still angry at having been tactically outmaneuvered, and not just for the first time this season. Either driver that most consider not to be his equal in terms of absolute out-and-out raw pace. So, yeah, it gets a little confusing there in that quote, quote-unquote, but I see what Martin is saying.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how much of that Martin's making up, because there's really no reason for Lewis to be upset. Okay, fine. You made a decision.
Listen, Steven.
Maybe it wasn't the best decision, but there's no reason to be, you know, to throw your race away because of it.
We talked about this kissy poo love affair between Hamilton and Button wasn't going to last.
Yeah. Well,
trust me, the tension is now building.
Oh yeah.
You cannot sit there and start hugging and kissing your teammate when you're both fighting for the same championship.
Exactly.
Towards the end of the season,
unless one's got a huge lead.
Exactly, and you capitulate.
Well, you basically got to have a situation like we've seen with Michael and Rubinho, or with, you know, Fernando and Fizzy, where it's kind of, hey, you know, or frankly, for that matter, with Lewis Hamilton and Heikki Kovalainen, you know, where there's really a well-defined one and two. And if the two guys are basically in the top five, then all bets are off.
They do call it an F1 team, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Yeah, that's F1 for you, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. Very much. So we'll see. You know, and of course, Whit Marsh, you know, of course, the team orders thing has reared its ugly head. And, of course, Whit Marsh continues, no, I will never, until the wind blows me down. You know, but it's a bunch of crap. And, of course, Jensen Button, you know, he says, I would quit before I followed any team orders. Well, that's all fine and dandy. But, you know, in the end of the day, you're a paid employee.
Yeah, and it all comes down to situational, you know. Ultimately, it comes down to he's not going to quit. He's just not going to follow him.
Exactly. Which, you know what? I don't have a problem with that. If Felipe Massa said, forget it, I'm not letting Fernando by, that would have added to the excitement.
Exactly. We would have had a far better story than, you know, Ferrari team orders.
So I don't have a problem with that. So I am pretty excited that finally things are going to steam up a little bit of McLaren. Because this love fest, you know, at the beginning of Silverstone with those two driving into the race and the little love bug, it was starting to really irritate me.
Yeah, definitely. It's just kind of like, ultimately, they're two Formula One drivers. They both have a championship, so really they don't have anything to lose. And I think that's actually helped them up to this point. But as they start to smell the finish line and can kind of see the trophy awaiting their arrival.
Yep, Mark Webber.
It's going to be like, boom!
Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel will be waving at them in front of the DNF chapel.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's going to be fascinating. Of course, Flavio Briatore came out and said, you know what, Red Bull, you better pick a number one and a number two now, or you're not going to win this championship.
Frankly, they can't. They're too close together.
I understand, but in the end, Christian Horner, you know, maybe in the next race or two, even if they're still pretty close mathematically, fighting for that championship can ruin your whole race when you have two drivers.
Yeah, well, they've really got to basically define that, hey, no, nothing, you know, if he's in front of you, you don't make a dumb, you don't try to make a dumb pass. You
exactly.
You pressure, but you don't put yourself in a position where either one of the cars will be removed. You know, if he makes a mistake, goes off, and you get it, great. But don't run. You know, the whole turkey thing cannot happen again.
I agree. We'll see how Vettel does. But really, the person that comes out and shines once again is el hombre muy macho de España. Fernando Alonso is looking strong, not making any mistakes. That was a great race. Ferrari has scored a lot of points in the last few races.
Well, Ferrari gave him a car that he could win with at Monza, and that was really all he asked for, and they pulled it off. just an amazing race. It was interesting watching Felipe.
Slowly.
When they talked to him, he's very, very mellow now. Like, you know, like bored mellow, because he knows that it was too funny because you were asking about how he felt about his qualifying. He said, oh, I'm fine with it, because, and you can hear the underlying tone is like, because if I were in front of him, I'd have to give it up anyway. So what's the point?
But he's not in front of him, Steve.
I know.
Fernando was pulling away from him in the race. Let's face it. Fernando is faster than you, Felipe. Yeah. So pull over.
Exactly. Let him through. You know, good job by Jens to hold him off as long as he did.
Absolutely.
You know, and I don't know that if the tables would have been turned if they'd flipped spots. It would have been really close if Fernando had come in first and Jens in second. I did make some mistakes in the podcast over the weekend in the fact that really, if you look at it, Jensen probably lost the race in the pits.
Well, he also lost it leaving the pits because the new tires that he was on didn't give him the grip out of the box as he had when he pitted with the older tires.
Yeah.
It was only lap 14, I believe, when he pitted.
No, really 14 laps left when he pitted.
Jensen Button?
Yes. Yes.
What lap did he pit on?
Would have been after it was like 30. It was late.
Oh, okay. I believe you.
Everybody pitted late because when everybody wanted to come in around 2026, Karin Chanduk decided to run over his radio technician and they had to have an ambulance in the pit
lane. That was right in front of me.
So the pits were closed while they brought the ambulance in to take him away.
You know, everybody had a good pit stop.
Yeah.
Vettel.
Well, actually,
everybody.
The interesting thing is watching Button's pit stop. You thought he nailed it because he was in and out of the box fast.
Absolutely.
But he had a 4.2 second stop. And I'm like going, and I think that's what confused me when I did the podcast, is because it looked like he had a really good stop. I thought that he was, you know, down in the high threes, at least for the time he was at. But turns out he was at 4.2. Alonso with a 3.4. 8 tenths of a second. That's really the difference between him being able to get out in front of Button around that lap.
Right. And his struggling with the tires and not being able to pull in a qualifying kind of lap after the pit stop.
Yeah, exactly.
To hold the lead. He couldn't do it. And therefore, it was a great, great move by Ferrari. The Tifosi went crazy. And this is what they wanted. Yeah.
And the only driver to have a better pit stop than Alonso, Vettel.
At the end, yeah.
At the end. 3.3 seconds. Lap. Just phenomenal pit stop by those guys.
I believe it. And most of the pit stops are pretty good these days. But it was a very exciting race. And to watch the crowd go onto the track, which they do traditionally every year, lose or win. It was very exciting to be there. I have to admit, it was just absolutely a thrill. So if any of you think about going over there, it's time to do it.
Yeah, the Italian Grand Prix is one to go to, considering it's historic. What, it's one of the two that's been run every year since the championship begun, and all but one have been at Monza.
Except for 1980.
Yeah.
Very exciting stuff. So anyway, let's go right to Nick Heidfeld, replacing Pedro De La Rosa at Sauber. There's only 5 races left. He will go ahead and drive in all 5 races. And we'll see what this... it's more development than anything else. But the other thing that leaves me scratching my head is, you know, Pedro De La Rosa, he was a test driver for years at McLaren.
Yeah.
Is Heidfeld going to be that much better than Pedro De La Rosa?
You know, the only thing I can think of is that his race experience is newer, or, you know, more is fresher, considering he was basically in a car last season, whereas Pedro basically hadn't actually driven a Formula One car in a race in 3 or 4 years. That's the only thing I can think of that would make him any different. The other thing is that you kind of, maybe it's a way for Sauber to kind of maybe glean a little bit of information on the new tires and how they performed versus what Bridgestone's putting on the track now, so that Sauber maybe can use some of that little bit of knowledge that Heidfeld got doing the testing for Pirelli. And that's the only thing I can really think of that would make that much sense. You know, Pedro has got to be fine for doing the development. You know, he hasn't been completely out-qualified by by Kobayashi. So I don't. Maybe Heidfeld's got a little less sponsorship in his pocket.
Not only that, but I think Nick Heidfeld gets along with Petter Sauber much better than Pedro De La Rosa. I think there were some personality issues.
Yeah.
And, of course, Pedro's race pace in the race wasn't fantastic. They're trying to maybe mix it up a little bit. Also, what I find interesting is I think Pedro De La Rosa would be perfect for Pirelli to go out and test the tires.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a straight swap. It would be perfect.
Yeah. Actually, if I'm Pirelli, I'm already contacting him. Go, hey, come on over.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought the whole thing was a little bizarre. And it was funny because when I bumped into Nick Heidfeld at the track, he didn't want to do an interview. But I was scratching my head. I'm going, shouldn't he be at Paul Ricard and testing Pirellis? Why is he here all of a sudden? And then right after I saw Nick, I saw Pedro De La Rosa. Now, whether they were exchanging text messages or something, I have no clue. But it was very bizarre. And then to see this news hit afterwards was very interesting, to say the least. So anyway, let's talk about Ferrari quickly, because I think Fernando now has the momentum.
I would definitely agree.
The momentum has shifted behind Ferrari. Even Red Bull should be worried.
Yeah, but the thing being is that how is the Ferrari going to perform on a track like Singapore, where the Red Bulls, with their combination of speed and downforce, are going to... I see them jumping back out to the fore and dominating again.
Well, Fernando Alonso says that now his car is versatile, the F10, and they can win at the rest of all five races.
Yeah, well, so can Red Bull and and McLaren, and you know, you could probably throw Mercedes and Renault into that mix as potential winners.
I think there's going to be a little more infighting for sure at McLaren, even though they will pretend that it doesn't exist. But for sure, Lewis Hamilton was definitely, I think, psychologically shaken, as Brundle says, and he's going to have to turn that around. He wants to turn that around, so he's going to be focused on beating Jenson Button at Singapore. On the other hand, Mark Webber...
Well, ultimately, if Ferrari has any advantage at the moment, it's the fact that there will be no...
Infighting
within the team.
None. They have a settled 1-2,
yeah,
which makes for a smooth transaction.
Well, definitely allows the team to focus where the team needs to focus. Where with Red Bull and McLaren, you've got the potential for the two halves of the team to be kind of jousting.
Exactly. And my point is, the word focus means focus. And when you're focused on one driver to win the championship, where the other two teams are focused, where they're two guys, I think Ferrari's got an advantage.
Yeah. Especially in that portion of the arena.
Yep.
Whether or not they can leverage that advantage to improve their opportunities against the cars that they're up against. You know, I don't know that McLaren is going to be as strong. You know, Singapore is kind of one of those a little bit odd tracks, because it's going to be a cold track because it's in the dark. And so it kind of makes a little bit of difference with the tires. But I see Red Bull being, again, coming a little bit more to the fore. I expect the Red Bulls to be on pole, because this is more of a track that's suited to what they've been doing earlier in the season.
Right, I agree. No, it's going to be interesting. Singapore is going to be very interesting, and I expect Renault to pick up the pace and Robert Kubica to be back in the top four at Singapore. He didn't have a great weekend in Italy. They made a mistake in the pits. He wasn't too happy about it, but I think they're going to bounce back.
Yeah, he was, of the times I have for pit stops, his was the worst. But I'm wondering if Renault's even putting time into development other than just kind of minor tweaks at this point.
Well, I certainly hope they're focused on the 2011 car. Everybody should be.
Yeah.
If you want to be a serious contender in the next season. So there you have it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We got Motorsports Mondial with Nasser coming right up. And, of course, the interview with Gabriel Rosencotter. We'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the dude of Karachi, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings, musical regards from Morricone, motor racing regards from Parco Monza. Party is over in three competitive and important series, GP2, GP3, and Formula BMW Europe. And moi is very pleased to report championship winners from two series of Friends of F1 Weekly, and we look forward to seeing them in Formula Uno in few short years. And Mr. Fobb, before we get into details, did you enjoy Monza?
Very much. One of the best races of the year. Just a really good race. Felt a little sorry for Button in basically kind of losing it in the pits. But overall, just a lot of good racing on the track all the way around. I did find it interesting that Nico Hülkenberg got to cut corners and nobody called him on it.
Gee, I wonder why. Okay, we shall start Motorsports Mondial with Formula BMW Europe. Final race of the season and also for the series, as men from Munich have pulled the plug on this entry-level series, which had become very popular and competitive in the last few years. Some of the graduates of the series include Sebastian Vettel, who won 18 of 20 races the year he won the championship, Timo Glock, Sebastian Buemi, and Nico Hülkenberg, and Hulk won the Formula BMW championship in his rookie season. Jack Harvey of UK has been the title favorite and championship leader going into Monza. After securing pole position for both races of the weekend, it was all signed, sealed, and almost delivered by the Royal Post. Then came race fun and Problemo at Parabolica. His winning curve took a serious turn for the worse when he collided with Javier Tarancón of Spain on lap 2 and was left purring in the kitty litter. His championship rival from the Netherlands, Mr. Robin Freins, put on a great performance to land in victory lane and took the championship lead from Harvey. And Harvey, we interviewed him in Barcelona, has been leading the race from round 1, which is Barcelona, leaving the big showdown in the final race to decide the last ever champion of the Formula BMW Europe Series, which was on Sunday. Harvey had to win the race to keep his championship alive. This he did, but Robin landed on third step of the podium to secure the championship, his 11th consecutive podium finish of the season. Very impressive. Russian driver Daniil Kvyat was second, his best finish of the season. He is backed by Red Bull. So basically, it's red by Red Bull. Congratulations to Robin Freins on winning the championship. Last year, he was Rookie of the Year in the same series with the same team, the friendly folks at Josef Kaufmann Racing. And latest hot off the press, since there is no more Formula BMW Europe, Josef Kaufmann Racing and probably some of the from this series will move up to Formula Renault. Kaufmann Racing is moving there pretty much sure. And they are testing Robin Freins this week at Hockenheim. So we wish them all the best. So this will give me an opportunity to test the waters of Formula Renault also.
Yeah, it makes sense for those teams that are basically kind of losing a car to drive to move up, just take the half step up to the next series. Make one or two of the drivers with them.
Yeah, and they normally run with the World Series by Renault, and quite a few serious drivers go there. Mr. Kubica came from there, and Hamilton and Raikkonen came from Formula Renault. So I'm looking forward to diversifying our field of coverage in terms of going to races. A great job during the season by Jack Harvey. Very nice kid. And like I said, we interviewed him in Barcelona. He led the championship from round one, which he won, and it's very sad to lose the championship in the final race, but that's motor racing. He still had the most wins, poles, and fastest laps of any driver, so keep up the good work to him. Now we move to GP3. What we have here is case, not of a star is born, but a star is confirmed. Esteban Gutierrez Gutierrez of Monterrey, Mexico, has won his second championship in Europe in 3 years of racing across the pond. Steven, if you win two championships in 3 years in Europe in junior Formula, what are the indications?
That you're pretty good.
You are on your way.
Yeah, pretty certain that Gutierrez will be in GP3 or GP2 next year.
Oh, yeah.
Probably with the top flight team.
Yeah. Esteban sealed the championship by gaining points, 2 points for his pole position, then drove an impressive race to win after falling back to fifth. He took the lead from Robert Wickens with 3 laps to go. Saturday's win was his fifth of the season. In 2008, he won the Formula BMW Europe in a dominating fashion. Last year, he endured a tough season in F3 Euro Series with ART team. But this year, switching to GP3 while staying with ART has been great for his confidence and racing resume. The future is bright for this 19-year-old. He is already under contract to Sauber and most probably will see him in next year in GP2, like you said. There's a good chance he might stay with ART, but interesting thing, you know, this team Maldonado won with is Spanish-based. I believe it's Spanish-based, and he might, you know, make a switch, but let's see what happens. The spirit of Rodriguez brothers will be back in Formula Uno soon, and I'm very happy for this and also for Mexican racing fans. As you know, Formula One is very popular in Mexico. Robert Wickens, a very talented kid from Toronto, he won 3 races and finished 2nd in the championship, and he is also very deserving of a GP2 ride next season. I hope he can find the budget to be with a competitive team. The Canadian racer from Toronto is very talented and has won races in Formula Atlantic, A1 GP, and Formula 2. You know, the thing about this kid, Steve, that I like, when he goes to a series, he wastes no time in winning a race. It's not like second year I'm going to come on strong. But then the first 5-6 races, boom, he bangs a win. Very aggressive, very good. Third man on the podium on Saturday was race winner from Turkey, Rio Haryanto of Indonesia. And he will now get an F1 test with Virgin Racing because the team he was driving for, Maynard, they're also, you know, people who run the Virgin Racing team. So they were going to give a F1 test ride to the highest Maynard driver, which Rio is, and also won a race. And the Sunday's race, final race of the GP3 season, was won by Robert Wickens. Gutierrez spun out early in the race while trying to avoid somebody who had braked early, and this happened at the beautiful Parabolica.
And I believe our friend Rossi finished 3rd in the championship?
Rossi was 4th.
4th?
He did get 2 wins, which is good. And I'm pretty sure he will be in GP2 also. You know, he raced last year, early this year in the GP2 Asia Series. He was quick, feisty, competitive, aggressive. And so I wish him all the best.
Yeah, maybe the bigger car suits him.
Yeah. And, okay, now we move up to the final frontier before Formula 1, GP2. Pole position for feature race went to Jules Bianchi with teammate Sam Bird sharing the front row and both looking for their maiden win in main GP2 series. And they are with their ART team. As it was after a thrilling race, the British Bird landed his first GP2 win with Bianchi in 2nd. And this is Sam Bird's first victory since his triumph at Spa in 2007 in a British F3 race. So he was Bird on a wire for a while. Okay. Sunday's sprint race was won by Christian Fittoris of Germany, and Pastor Maldonado became the first non-European GP2 champion. He won 6 races this season and is very confident he will be in the big show next year with the help of his manager, Nicola Todd, and lots of pesos from PDVSA, the national oil company of Venezuela. You know, I interviewed him in 2008 Barcelona at the GP2 race. Mm-hmm. Very nice, friendly guy, and I wish him all the best. Rally Japan or Japan, same old song but with a different theme. Citroën wins with Sebastian as the driver, but this time winning driver was Sebastian Ogier, and this was his first attempt in the Rally Japan, so good for him. Raikkonen rumors are flying in WRC and F1. In F1, he is linked to Renault after approaching them, probably through his manager Steve Robertson. And in WRC, he's linked to a drive in a Monster-sponsored Mini. You know, Mini is coming back and rallying, and they'll be entered by Dave Richards' Pro Drive team. Yeah, you know, Raikkonen has to approach a team through his management because, you know, if he calls, all he will ask, opening.
Yeah.
I think
they I drive?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I don't see him coming back to Formula One. You know, if like Clark brought this up in the first segment, you know, if he's calling Renault, he's probably talking to Renault to put a car into WRC.
Yeah.
It's like I can't see him going back to F1 after 1 year in WRC. He's having too much fun.
Yeah. Okay, now we come to Silverstone 1,000 kilometer. Peugeot 1-2 led by Anthony Davidson and Nicolas Minassian over sister car, entered by Orica team and driven by Nicolas Lapierre and Stéphane Sarrazin. And Stéphane Sarrazin is a man who was raced also in Formula One and WRC. Pretty impressive there. Grand Am from Tuolumne in Utah. Scott, hi to my family, Pruitt, and Memo Rojas won the race and the championship in a BMW-powered Riley of Chip Ganassi Racing. Chip Ganassi is winning racing and championships in every series.
All over the place.
Yeah. Okay, John, the old man down the road, Fogarty, and Alex Gurney was second in a Chevy-powered Riley. Finally, we come to Lane Escar from Richmond. Danny Hamlin and Kyle Busch gave Toyota 1-2 finish, and the chase begins with the next race. Now, a moment in Monza history. Today, we will look at drivers who scored their maiden wins at Monza, and one of them is going to give us a tour of one lap at the Autodromo.
Monza. Speed, tifosi, and my first victory.
Monza. 5.8 kilometers, 53 laps. In all, 307 kilometers. Four high-speed stretches, two slow turns. Two ideal spots for overtaking. Top speed, 351 kilometers per hour.
Welcome to Italy, welcome to Monza. One of the fastest tracks, come with me one lap in the Red Bull F1 simulator. Down to turn one, braking hard chicane, right and left, using a lot of curb before it goes on to the next straightaway. Monza is one of the oldest tracks in the calendar with a lot of tradition, and we can feel it in the car with a lot of bumps. Here we go to the second chicane, again braking hard, down to second gear, a lot of curbs on the left, a lot of curbs on the right. Two right-handers, first one, fourth gear, it's pretty quick, extremely tricky, as in Monza we use very low wings to maximize the speed on the straight lines before we go back on power again. Braking hard for Variante Ascari, next chicane, hitting the first curb on the left and then going through the right hander and the final left kink, fourth, fifth, sixth gear. Monza is physically quite an easy circuit. Last corner, third to fourth gear, Parabolica, opens up out of last corner, early on throttle, maintaining all the speed, and then we're crossing start and finish line again. That was one lap around Monza circuit. I hope you enjoyed.
Thank you, Mr. Vettel. We shall start with Phil Hill, 1960. First win for Phil, last win for front engine car in Grand Prix racing. Jackie Stewart. First win came at Monza in 1965. The Scottish safety swami took his first Grand Prix win here at the wheel of a BRM. 1966, local driver Ludovico Scarfiotti took his first and only Grand Prix win at the wheel of a Ferrari. And hard to believe, this was the last time the Italian Grand Prix was won by an Italian driver. Poor Michele Alboreto came close. He finished second to Gerhard Berger in the 1988 Italian Grand Prix. Clay Regazzoni, 1970. The Italian-speaking Swiss driver won a race for Enzo in only his fourth Formula One start. Victory was overshadowed by the death of Jochen Rindt during qualifying. Regazzoni won again at Monza in 1975 and was the first winner of the Long Beach Grand Prix in 1976. It was Rega who gave Frank Williams his first Grand Prix win in 1979 at Silverstone. This next race is one of my all-time favorite race, and if I could be at any race in the history of motor racing, this would be very high on the agenda. Peter Gethin, 1971. The last great pre-chicane Monza race saw slipstreaming battles from start to finish. Four drivers had a chance to win the race going into Parabolica, and for the final time, Ronnie Peterson looked set to score his first F1 triumph in a March, but Peter Gethin in a BRM got ahead by the narrowest of margins when they crossed the finish line. Top four drivers were all within half a second at the end. Peterson would go on to win at Monza in 1973, 74, and 76 before losing his life at Monza in 1978. And today, Peter Gethin runs a high-performance driving school in England. Then, Monty, Juan Pablo Montoya, 2001. A percolated racing talent from the land of Juan Valdez brewed his first Grand Prix win in his first year of Formula One, always a very positive sign of true racing talent. His pace in the Williams BMW broke the record of Gethin's 1971 win as the fastest ever Grand Prix. And finally, 2008, Sebastian Vettel, when he was well-liked by everyone, including Mark Webber. There you have it, folks, the piece of motor racing from Parco Monza. And Sebastian Vettel, man, I'll tell you, this guy, I think, if he does not win the championship, which is a possibility that he may or may not win, but if he does not win, sooner or later he's going to realize he should have won the World Championship this year. But he has time on his side. And
yeah, he's got a couple of more years if Red Bull can maintain their basic dominance in the next couple of years. He's going to have a couple of chances.
Yeah, and he is very good talent. I mean, the guy is phenomenal in the rain, as Mark Webber again found out in Japan some years ago. Do you remember when he crashed into Mark Webber in Japan in heavy rain some years ago?
Vaguely.
Yeah, that was something. Okay, now we come to Mr. Brazier's goodie bag. Was kind enough to send me some data, pre-race and post-race of the Italian Grand Prix this year. Now, okay, this is really surprising to me that this world champion, current world champion, was on the front row for the first time. That was very impressive in winning two races before Hamilton got any. Was that kind of a surprise for you, sir?
It was a bit, because I didn't expect the Red Bulls to be quite as slow as they turned out to be. And basically the Ferraris, you know, and the McLarens kind of locking out the front rows was kind of odd to see this season.
Jarno Trulli has now started in 229 Grand Prix, equaling his countryman Giancarlo Fisichella at fifth on the all-time list. And I was reading an interview, I think it's on autosport.com, from Jarno Trulli. He has no intention of retiring. So he probably will become a case of racing will retire him before he retires from racing.
Exactly. Rubinho too.
Yeah. And, you know, Pedro de la Rosa, of course, his best result is fifth at this track with Jaguar in 2001. And now he has been booted out of Sauber, which is, that's the way these things goes. And we talked about Monty winning in 2001 as the fastest race. That was also Williams' last win at Monza. Okay, so there we have some pre-race and post-race. Mr. Ye writes, again, this was quite a surprise for me too. Alonso's pole was Ferrari's first since the 2008 Brazilian Grand Prix, 30 races ago. That's a big, big surprise.
That seems odd, but yeah. But not really surprising considering how bad they were last year.
Yeah. And Michael Schumacher, this again, anything about him surprises, either positively or negatively. Qualified outside the top 10 at Monza for the first time. And I got to tell you something, man. Once upon a time, some years ago, when he was winning anything and everything with Ferrari, it was amazing, you know, every Grand Prix, Michael Schumacher was setting some sort of a new record.
Yeah.
Most laps, most points, most consecutive points.
Yeah, that last season at Ferrari, it was like every weekend there was something else that he, some other record that he knocked off, you know, laps led or...
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Extending his poles lead.
Yeah. Somebody should ask him who's sorry now for coming back.
Yeah, we'll see. Actually, I think for him this season was kind of to get it back in the groove. If he's this bad again next season, it's going to be interesting to see if he comes back for a third.
Yeah, but you know the thing is the difference is quite. He's hanging in there, but the difference between him and points wise is quite big between him and Rosberg, Nico Rosberg.
And Rosberg's been more and more dominant as the season's progressed. So that's going to be, like I said, going to be interesting to see how things go early next season as to whether or not he sticks it out.
Yeah. And for Fernando Alonso's 24th win, which is very impressive, he is, now has the same number of wins as Juan Manuel Fangio. And this is, I mean, once you get to that, in that level, that is just incredible.
Yeah.
And he also has 59 podium finishes, which is the same number as our beloved Arnage.
Yeah, the one advantage though drivers now have though is the fact that they've got, you know, nearly twice as many races as the likes of Fangio ever raced. What, Fangio's first season in 1950, what was it, 8 races that year? Was it even 8?
Yes.
And now they're getting, you know, it's 18 or 20. Yeah. It's twice as many opportunities to get a win.
Yeah. And this, nothing to be proud of here, the dubious record of retiring on the last lap of the Italian Grand Prix last year, and this time retiring on the very first lap, Lewis Hamilton. And, you know, I was very disappointed that it happened because these things can be very costly, especially going into the final races of the season.
Yeah.
And I personally think that advantage now is really with Mark Webber. Because there's quite a big of a spread between him and Alonso, and the way reliability is, even if Nando wins all the races, Webber will be there second or third.
Yeah, well, not only that, but Lewis completely squandered the momentum he had coming out of Spa.
Yeah.
To basically be out on the first lap. You know, Clark and I talked about this a little bit in the first segment, in the fact that you take a driver like Nando, would never have made that mistake. He would not have allowed himself to get knocked out on the first lap. He wouldn't have tried to push into a spot where he really didn't have any business putting his nose. Lewis needed and needs to take a little bit longer view when he's in that position. You're leading the championship. If you finish fourth, more power to you because all three guys in front of you are behind you in points.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, these things are on paper are very easily said and written.
Oh, yeah. I can completely understand the adrenaline of being in the car. But it's something that he needs to learn because I've seen, you know, he's kind of done it before.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is 2007 deja vu.
Yeah.
I mean, you really need, I mean, if the guy behind, if the guy who's 30 points behind you is going to finish 3 points ahead, you know, with 5 races to go, so be it, you know.
Yeah.
But the guy is a hustler, you know. I mean, Singapore is a street race. He should do well.
Yeah, it should be. Singapore is going to be interesting because I think we're going to see a resurgence of the Red Bulls. McLaren's will be maybe a little bit better. And it'll be interesting to see how versatile the Ferrari really is.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, what is versatile there is the team can tell Massa. They already are telling that. You know, it's interesting. Everybody's fighting other drivers plus their teammate.
Yeah.
So, and Nando doesn't have that. But the thing is, you know, you take the wins and championship the way they come.
Yeah, that was one of the things that also, you know, the things we talked about was the fact that if Ferrari has one advantage, it's that they have the defined number one.
Yeah.
And the whole team will be focused towards moving him forward.
Yeah.
Whereas the other two teams are, you know, basically get the two teams within the team kind of working against each other to get their guy forward, and that could be detrimental.
Yeah, basically it will come down to, like, if Webber loses because Vettel took some points from him, and if Hamilton loses, Button got ahead of him in a couple of races. I think it's going to get dog-eat-dog war.
It's going to get interesting. Yeah. We already, you know, saw this past weekend about how out of sorts Button's better qualifying put Hamilton. You know, Brundle was all over basically going, he was completely emotionally wrecked by by Jensen's, you know, better performance and strategy. And it's like, why?
Well, they went for the different package, you know, tried, and these things happen. But a fantastic race. You know, I love Monza, obviously. The race was over very quickly, which is another thing I like. And now we look forward to Singapore Firecracker at Yan Can Cook.
Should be very interesting, Singapore, because, you know, the tires can never, you know, the track never gets hot because it's in the dark. So should be very interesting weekend when we get to Singapore.
So next is our conversation, our late night evening in the car conversation with Mr. Gabriel Rosenketter.
Okay, folks, I'm here with an IT guru, F1 fan, and most importantly, member of the F1 Weekly Familia, Gabriel Rosenketter.
Yes.
Welcome to Kelly. Welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Very good, thank you, especially after the fine dinner we had today at Katie Bloom's in Campbell. Question for you, what brings you to the left coast?
Work, as... has been for the past few months. I was home for 4.5 days in the month of July, sort of taking care of big computers for other people.
And Mr. Peter Brazier let it out that the other people are TiVo in beautiful El Viso. When I read in El Viso, we have a joke here. El Viso has a very fine technical college, but that's another story. So tell us a little bit about El Viso.
Well, it's not sinking into the bay quite as much as you might imagine. I have been informed that you could take the Amtrak up the coast and see what used to be Drawbridge, California, which has sunk down. But it's a nice community. It's mostly Hispanic, and then sort of out of the sky, Silicon Valley dropped. So there's the customer that I'm with this week, I don't know what else. Citrix, I think Adobe has some space up there. There's a whole series of what you'd expect to see anywhere in one of the communities around San Jose. So,
and you mentioned you've been home for a day or two only, and where is home?
Home is Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Only for about 3 years now, I've actually lived in the city, but I've lived in the area for about 10 years and grew up in St. Louis, Missouri.
Did you know Rusty Wallace and people like that?
Not personally.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Okay, now, how did you discover the beautiful world of Formula One?
Through another Formula One Weekly listener, a guy named Rodolphe Boulanger, who I went to college with at Swarthmore College outside of Philadelphia, whose father was a big racing fan and inducted Rodolphe to it in probably the early 80s or so. But so Rodolphe's been my source for any knowledge until I came across F1 Weekly, rather.
Now, Pennsylvania is home to Pocono International Raceway.
That's true.
A very nice location, very nice famous track. Why did you not develop any interest in, let's say, NASCAR or IndyCar? And I'm not saying this as a negative thing, but why not gravitate towards oval racing and more towards road racing?
When I started driving, the first car that I actually owned was a Volkswagen Jetta, and just the concept of going around in circles. IndyCar racing and NASCAR and so on and so forth makes much more sense to me now that I understand all of what goes around the backside. But it just looked pretty boring, and it certainly wasn't what I enjoyed doing when I was driving questionably in my, you know, 16 to 20 year range. And so it made much more sense to watch road racing.
Okay, what was the first ever motor race you went to?
Was probably a GT series race at Lime Rock in Connecticut.
I've been to that track. Very beautiful location. Very nice track. What is your impression of that track?
It's lovely. I've been to relatively few race tracks when it comes down to it. But it's nice to sort of get a feeling of what what are now greater tiers of motorsports might have felt like at the time, because it's very easy to get close to the track. It's easy to get into the paddock. It's easy to actually talk to people, and there's a little bit of media hoopla going on, but they, you know, there's people in camper vans out there in the middle of the infield, and yeah, that's all fine. And it's comfortable and easy to deal with, and I think that I've been to a couple of middle of the summer, so maybe Memorial Day races there, and people show up and park in the parking lot, which is a big grass field, in a GT car from last year that they bought off of the team when they got rid of it at the end of the year, and it's kind of a happy feel.
And how did you discover F1 Weekly?
That's again due to Mr. Boulanger, or Mansour Boulanger.
Mansour Boulanger?
Something.
Oh, Monsieur Boulanger. Monsieur,
yeah. My French is
gee, I thought he was
horrible.
I thought he was a homie français.
I beg your pardon, Rodolphe. He both got me interested in Formula One originally, and then also several years later said, so if you don't actually want to chase around after all these various websites trying to find information, you could just get it all here and listen to it regularly. So it's not the only podcast recommendation he and I have thrown back and forth, but...
No, it's good to listen to other stuff. Now, how long have you known Mr. Boulanger?
Since 1998, when he and I were both students, he was a couple years ahead of me, but, was part of a group of people who regularly pulled April Fool's pranks on Swarthmore's campus, which was something of a hobby at the time, but I've reformed slightly in the corporate world.
Okay, you're pretty active on the forum, and you're, like I said, a technical guru, for which we are very thankful. Who do you think is the craziest guy on the forum?
Wow, that's a tough one. I think Tricky Dicky's probably going to have to get away with that one when he's actually present. I sort of grew up with the internet, so I grew out of the phase of trolling people just to piss them off at some point, but it's nice to see people practicing the art form still to a certain extent.
Yeah, and when you're working with Ministry of Defense, you feel pretty safe and secure.
And you also need to let off a little bit of steam. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, give us your take on the season so far, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Up until this year, I'd been a timid Vettel supporter. I try not to be too much in anybody's camp just because I enjoy watching all of it go past. And I'm very frustrated with how the whole Red Bull situation has gone. I'm unsurprised that Mr. Schumacher has sort of fizzled a little bit. What else? It's curious to see how well McLaren's doing, given that they shouldn't really be up there. I came into the sport in the middle of the Schumacher era, so I just sort of have a bad taste in my mouth about Ferrari. So I don't feel bad about their not having done well for the past couple of years. And I just have a reflex action of disliking the fact that Alonso's pulling it off. But on the other hand, it's Alonso. You know, there's things to like there. So it's certainly been exciting. And at least the point spread is still fairly close, so we've got a lot to look forward to this weekend.
Yes, indeed, especially after 3 weeks of torture. Who do you think will be world champion when it's all said and done?
Poof. I think that it's awfully close to call right now. I don't think it will be Alonso, despite what he says. Kind of looking like maybe Weber at this point.
Okay, if you were a team owner, who would be your two drivers this season?
Two drivers that aren't going to fight with each other. My two drivers for the 2011 season based on performance this season? Is that the question? Or?
We can make it, that's the question.
I still really want to like Vettel, but it's just so unfortunate. I think that it would be I think that Massa's doing very well and deserves to be out of somebody's shadow for a change. So perhaps Massa and Weber?
That's an interesting combination. Two pretty decent guys.
I think they probably managed not to run into each other. That would be my hope. Or to be ordered to get out of each other's way.
So you want teammates so there is no cage rattling? Okay, let me rephrase the question. Who would be the two best drivers to be serious cage rattlers?
Well, we could just put Hamilton and Alonso back together. Hamilton and Vettel would be interesting to see. I think that might provoke some fireworks, especially after this season.
You know, I would love that combo. Alonso and Hamilton, we've had seen that, but Vettel and Hamilton would be very good. Okay, what was the first Formula One race you went to?
Went to, personally, was the 2005 Canadian GP.
Was Mr. Boulanger there also?
Yes, it was him and me and a third friend of ours who is not a frequent listener or contributor because it's sort of out of his purview, but another Swarthmore College grad named Rafael Hinojosa.
2005, I also at that race.
Hey, which corner were you on? Where were you?
Casino corner, the final corner which turns around.
Yeah.
But let me ask you a question if you remember. Do you remember the wonderful weather we had on Saturday?
Yeah, wonderful wouldn't describe it. It was worthy of complaining about the heat as opposed to the people in Northern California who've been moaning about mid-90s the past couple of days. But, that was one of the worst sunburns I've had in my life, probably.
Yeah, it was. I was getting so sick. I told my friend, I said, you know, if this is like this, I'm not coming to the race. But the race day was great, and it was a great race. Did you enjoy Montreal? It's like the favorite place along with Melbourne of anybody and everybody.
Yeah, no, it's a great city, and it's so easily navigable, and I can't... If I'd thought about this earlier, I would have tried to remember the name of the hotel that I have stayed in the past when I've visited the city outside of Formula One. But it's anywhere in the city center. It's very easy to get out to the islands, and everything in Montreal is great. And it's in contrast with some other sections of Quebec, people are not at all snooty about you're not speaking their kind of French, even, because Rollo's got Parisian French, but that wouldn't pass necessarily. So,
okay. Now, are there any plans to go to another Formula One race in the near future?
Yeah, Rodolphe and I would have both been at this year at the 2010 Montreal, but the work was too busy for both of us, and we did plan early enough. But I think probably next year we'll be up there, and the year after that, Austin and. So.
Okay. Now, when you watch a Formula One race, what kind of a race do you enjoy? Do you enjoy a race where somebody totally dominates, so there's a lot of lead changes? What kind of a race do you enjoy?
It's a bit much to hope for a lot of lead changes these days. I enjoy races that go back and forth a lot. So processional races, not a whole lot of fun. I'm trying to think of what's been especially good this year. I've also had my head in work for 3 weeks, so I'm not even coming up with that necessarily. But races that go back and forth, or that even if the lead doesn't change, there's serious racing in several places on the track, provided the producer manages to follow it well enough. Is what's actually interesting. It's interesting to see how the change in the lack of refueling has changed pit strategy a lot, to the point where it doesn't seem like pit strategy still results in position changes, but not for the same reason that it used to. It's not about long fueling or short fueling, and especially the harder tire can usually last the whole race, but you do have to go through both of them. So it was Alonso who ducked in like 1.5 laps in and changed tires, and then ended up moving way far up through the field. That's been a fun dynamic to sort of get a handle on.
Now, you're an IT guy. Do you take a lot of interest on the technical side of racing cars?
Less than you'd think, actually. I For a time, when I still owned a car, which I don't because I live in a big city, so it's easy to get around on public transit and walking, I toyed with the idea of figuring out programming one's own ECU mapping and stuff like that. It's... The details are so complex, and my background is computer science rather than engineering, and so much of it is fluid dynamics and stuff that I sort of, like, I know how that works, but I don't know how to make it work. So it's never been quite my main focus. It's my initial interest in race car driving was in the driver rather than the technical aspect, and so my interest in the other has come along, but gotten there.
Okay. Now, quite a few people have sent us email. It's also posted on the forum to watch the BBC feed. What are the ways they can watch BBC if they want to? And I understand you can also get Portuguese, Spanish, Argentine, whatever. What say you on the BBC issue?
Well, I also watch a feed of the BBC on a regular basis, and I like the coverage from the BBC much better. But if you can track down someone who's broadcasting rather than the regular TV commentators, the Radio 5 Live commentators, which frequently, not every race, but frequently includes Anthony Davidson. Anthony Davidson is one of the best driver commentators that I've ever heard. He's very good about explaining driver perspective very clearly. I understand Karun Chanduk does that pretty well too, and it's only ever come up in interviews, I think, this year. Although maybe he was on for a practice session or a qualifying session at some point. But it's miles above people like David Coulthard and so on and so forth, who are sort of past the sport and just sort of assume that you know what he's talking about and know as much as he does. It's nice to hear more detail about how things actually work while you're on the track and how things actually work in the pits. And we definitely don't get that on any of the U.S. coverage, even when it's on Speed rather than Fox.
Austin Grand Prix, do you think it will happen? And what's your take on having a race in Austin?
I'm sort of taking it for granted that it's going to happen. I agree with Clark's assertion over dinner that if it comes immediately before or immediately after the Canadian Grand Prix, and the Canadian Grand Prix doesn't change places in the schedule, it is going to be a hot time in Austin. I'd be curious to see whether they decide to... P.S. I am sort of taking it for granted that it's going to happen. I think that there's been enough clamor for it, and Austin is a wealthy enough city to be able to pull that off in the business populace because of the South by Southwest Festival every year. And I can't decide whether it would be a really great idea or a really horrible idea to try to have the Formula One race coincide with some huge event like South by Southwest. Would save them the trouble of trying to fly in washed out rock stars to do the interim music, but well, safe.
You know, like in the old days, we used to have the U.S. Grand Prix East Watkins Glen and U.S. Grand Prix West Long Beach. I think we should also have a North by Northwest Grand Prix in Minneapolis. Have you ever been to Minneapolis, by the way?
Yes, actually, I was there for badly enough work, as it turns out, not terribly long ago. It's a wonderful. Both Minneapolis and St. Paul are really nice. They're so quiet. The city is just done at 10 p.m. Unless you know the right places to go. I'm friends with a few bartenders up there. So there are some things to do, but I'm not sure that Minneapolis-St. Paul is ready for a Formula One weekend. That might be kind of a crushing blow.
If they can have it in Phoenix, I'm sure they can have it in... You know, they used to... There is still
Phoenix
a track.
Phoenix isn't what it used to be either, so... Phoenix is huge now with all the banking industry that moved down there, but...
Okay, now you do quite a bit of traveling around the country. What part of the country you enjoy going most?
That's a tough one. It's easier to answer the question the other way, which is that... I prefer to be near some kind of metropolitan area, and near enough to actually get there.
You're pretending to be a big city boy?
Oh, I'm not even pretending. Well, what? St. Louis isn't big enough for you? There have been times. The worst one of these is when I was with a coworker for a week on site with a customer who assured us that their offices were walking distance, and they were from a hotel, but that meant that we didn't rent a car, which meant that we were between their office and the hotel the entire time that we were there. And it's not so much fun. It's better to be able to get out every once in a while. So,
what's your take on California?
I like California very much. I've considered living in San Francisco. I've gone when I was changing jobs a couple jobs ago. I went through some interviews with a few companies in Silicon Valley. I have a lot of friends who live in San Francisco and work at places like Google and so on and so forth. So it would be an easy move. At the moment, I really do like living on the East Coast. So a lot of the places I get sent, I don't have to jump on a plane. I just it's a train or a drive, and so even if it's in the middle of nowhere, Rhode Island, I'm still an hour away from Boston, and I can go meet up with friends there. So one of the nice things about having a job that travels like this and having stayed in touch with college friends and high school friends is that it's easy to catch up with them when you're in their neck of the woods.
Going back to motor racing, mm-hmm. Do you follow other series like GP2 or American Racing Scene?
I don't quite so much on either of those two. I used to keep very close track of WRC and have sort of fallen off beyond just keeping track of who's in the lead, because there isn't a very good way to watch it on the actual races in the U.S. I watched an A1GP race or two when they were still doing that and when they were available online. Beyond that, I have limited time away from work and travel and my other hobby, which is the whole bartending thing. I don't think I mentioned this before, but I am the treasurer for the Pennsylvania chapter of something called the U.S. Bartenders Guild, which is usually something that a working bartender holds, but we found that it's very useful to have somebody who's awake at the same time that banks and post offices are open. So that's been fun and a whole other side of things to keep track of and group of celebrities to track. So
what's the difference between a Heineken and a PBR?
Largely the country of manufacture.
That's it. Okay, great. Now, how about a message for other family members around the world, please?
Keep listening to 401 Weekly. These guys are absolutely as genuine as they sound. And if you drop out of the world in San Jose, they will probably come out and meet you for dinner. And Clark will be happy to show off his Citroën.
Oh, yes, and anybody who wants to meet us is very welcome to drop us a line, and we would love to meet other members of the familia. Gabriel Rosenketter, final words to the F1 Weekly family.
Keep watching. Keep up the good work, right? That's one. And racing regards.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gabriel, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. So let's go right to the wrap-up with the forum updates.
Forum updates. It was another fun, exciting week on the forums. Prompted by the recent lack of a French GP, there was a good discussion of which countries deserve priority status on the calendar and should never be without a race. The consensus was England, France, Italy, and Germany are the top of the class, with USA, Japan, and Brazil getting honorable mention. This thread then evolved, somehow, into a search for the southernmost race track in the world. In a shocking turn of events, Wikipedia has proven wrong when it was discovered that the honor belongs to Autódromo Cabo Negro in Puente Arenas, Chile. News broke that the reintroduction of turbochargers is under consideration, which led to much speculation as to how the currently dominant world of F1 engines could be made more interesting, with some members advocating the ability to choose between different types of fuel. A very interesting Japanese trailer for the upcoming Ayrton Senna biopic has sparked a veritable brush fire of threads. Everyone should make sure to catch that exciting preview. Always a fun topic, the definition of the term privateer team was debated, with no agreement reached. Watch that space, as a sequel is surely in the works. Last but certainly not least, our very own Tricky Dicky has taken the plunge and joined the Mac community. Welcome to the light, sir. With Monza coming this weekend, things are sure to be as busy and engaging as ever on the forum, so everyone is encouraged to stop by and join in. New members are always welcome on the F1 Weekly Forum.
There you have it, Steve. I guess that forum update was a little dated.
A little dated. That must have been last week, since we ran the show a little early to get the host out of town.
That's right. I had to catch a flight. There you have it, and I think we have one email.
I have one
to clarify.
Yes, I have one email from Boris, and Boris wrote, I was just listening to the latest podcast, 457, which was the race podcast for this past weekend, and the podcast seemed wrong about the pit stop times. My memory may be incorrect, but from my recollection, Alonso's pit stop was 3.5 seconds, while Button's was 4.2. The 7/10 is the reason Alonso got the advantage and eventually won. You guys said that Vettel had the fastest stop at 3.3, and Rosberg at the time was 3.7 was the fastest when he actually took his. You also said the difference in pit stops between Button and Alonso were only 0.2. I'm pretty sure that was in there. Yep. Yeah. Basically, I went back and looked, Boris, and I was incorrect. Button had what appeared to be a great stop, but a really crummy time. He was had a 4.2 second stop. Alonso's was actually 3.4. giving him an 0.8 advantage, which is pretty much the change in the race. Vettel had the fastest stop of the weekend at 3.3. Rosberg had a 3.7, which at the time he did it was the fastest stop. Massa was at 3.5, just for some other ones that I picked up. Liuzzi was 4 seconds flat. Kubica, probably the worst stop of the day at 5.6, though they never showed us any of the times for the other lower tier teams. And then the Hulkenberg was in and out in 4 seconds. So, thanks for the email, Boris, and thanks for keeping us honest.
Yes, absolutely. That shows you that some of these listeners are paying attention, Steve.
Yeah. Wow.
Shocking, but true. Quickly, San Francisco Formula One group. Check them out at sff1.com. They're always doing some exciting stuff, either karting or hanging out at the bar. So if you're in town and need a group to hang around with, the San Francisco Formula One group are the ones to contact. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. Simply go to CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and make us a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. We are cheap and bargain basement. Steve, another outstanding podcast. I want to thank all the listeners, and I'm going to go home and get some rest. Good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for f1weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.